Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here it is, Black Monday, Tuesday. Black Tuesday.
It's Black Monday and Tuesday.
No, it's Black Monday. It's the day after Black Monday. Yeah, like that.
It was kind of ugly in the morning. We'll go over some of this. I got a lot of good notes.
Yeah, I was watching I was watching the ticker today and watched how it was, it's down and it's coming up. And it came kind of leveled off and then it shot up.
Yeah, it was pretty ugly. Let's start out with first, before we get into a market update, let's talk about the Super Bowl, but just for a moment. Did you enjoy it? Did you watch it? Did you get anything out of it?
Yeah, I got out of it. You know, everyone's going on and on about Nick Foles being such a shock. I remember when he was a starter for the Eagles in the 2013-2014 season, somewhere in there. And he set a bunch of records or passes in a row. He was just setting the place on fire using this Chip Kelly offense, which they reinstalled for him, pass-run offense. I always thought it was, and then he was kicked to the curb and disappeared off the face of the earth, almost retired. And when he came back, none of this surprised me.
He was always
a really great quarterback.
Yeah, I thought he was great.
I was stunned by the way everyone reacted to that.
And there was a couple of great plays, that little flea flicker reverse, and then catching it in the end zone. You know, QB Foles catching in the end zone. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, welcome to the college game.
That's what I said.
1970.
That's exactly what I said. I said, hey, wait, that's a college play. What happened? That's awesome. Hey, also, I want to get your thoughts on the commercials.
Yes, I didn't see all of them.
Right.
I've kind of given up on these commercials because I think it's like, why are we? They're actually having whole shows of commercials. I mean, I think it's making a fool of the public. I don't think the commercials are that. There's two or three of them that are okay. I didn't see anything that was knocked my socks off, and I skipped a lot of them. Talking robots was kind of funny. The avocado commercial I liked.
The Doritos commercial was kind of good.
I didn't care for that.
No?
I didn't care for the Dodge commercial using Martin Luther King.
I thought there was no really, in the past, has been very creative, very tightly comedic commercials. And, you know, something you want to see. I mean, back in the days when GoDaddy was there, right? When you was, let's see the GoDaddy.
Well, GoDaddy always has some decent, kind of.
Not much these days. It's not
very
impressive. No,
it's because they got to spend $5 million to put the commercial on. They don't have any time to make a good commercial or any money left.
Yeah, I was generally disappointed. I was disappointed.
I think it's something of a scam. Yep. And by the way, there are too many commercials.
Always.
It slows the game down, and it's not good.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the markets. I guess we got to start off with the fact that there's something just not quite right about the markets.
I like to. It was just as Yellen handed over the torch to the new guy.
Yeah.
She also handed over the collapse. And yeah. She left with an interview with Judy Woodruff saying, you know, I think the market's overpriced.
And actually, I got a couple of things like that. Greenspan talked about that. I'll mention that in a bit. I got some notes on that. Actually, her parting gift to the markets, I'm going to leave everybody hanging a little bit on this, but she had a parting gift to the markets on the Friday of last week after she left, after the Fed meeting and the rate decision. After the close of the market, that was like, huh? But we'll get to that in a second. Hey, like that. A little teaser. Keep them interested.
Well, they should be anyway.
You can follow John C. Dvorak on Twitter, of course, @TheRealDvorak, and myself, Andrew Horowitz. John always has some witty things
to say. If you're not following me, please follow me. My Twitter followers are starting to drop off.
Oh, they are, huh?
Oh, yeah, big time.
Oh, boy. Stay away from politics.
No, well, I mean, it's even not even that. It's just the... there's so many fake accounts out there. They're starting to track them down.
Yeah. There was actually some interesting story about the bots and how the bots are, you know, all the political bots that are out there. They showed about, I guess, 15 different accounts saying exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Well, that's hardly new.
Yeah. This is a big, this is the, the social media was the greatest platform ever for advertising for free. That's what they turned it into.
We still advertise for free. We put up our show, put a link to the show on Twitter, and you point to it. That's that free advertising, yeah, the way I see it.
Yeah, and the same thing with all the companies that usually would pay for advertising. They could just get a, you know, set up multiple accounts. There should be some way to just have one account per one person or one account per one business or something. I don't know. Well, then again, yeah, if you have a business with 1,000 employees, though, I guess everybody can have.
They don't care. They just want a lot of numbers. Yeah. More numbers, the better.
Well, let me tell you some of the things that happened last week. We had one of the best starts of the year in history in January, which quickly turned into an absolute bloodbath. And I guess the right way to phrase it, as you will hear from some of the old timers, is there's blood in the streets. Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 1,100 points last week. Not this week, last week. The S&P 500 was down 4% last week. And while last week kind of started out, it started out on a good note. Things were just progressing as normal and as usual. You know, the usual little range here, little range there, closed in the green. Everything was fine. Thursday, things got a little wonky. After Google and Apple and Microsoft Amazon posted their numbers, Amazon blew it out, did unbelievable. Stock went straight up. Google disappointed. Apple was lukewarm at best. We had rising bond yields that kind of were going crazy towards the end of the week. And that was especially due to the fact that we saw a solid employment number. But more importantly than the solid employment number was we had a extremely strong wage growth number, 2.9% on a year-over-year basis, the strongest it's been in decades. And now all of a sudden the concern was, uh-oh.
Yes.
More wages. That's going to equal inflation. The Fed is going to, you know, raise rates.
That was the excuse.
Yeah, that was the excuse. Then we have the potential for a government shutdown this week. And then Monday came around. Monday, there was a temporary moment of buying activity, and all of a sudden things just went to hell in a handbasket.
So what was that like, since you were actually working in the business on that day? What was it like?
It created some interesting trading opportunities. That was kind of cool because, you know, things were just getting just blown out all over the place in the afternoon. You're like, wow, that's ridiculous, that price. So we set up a bunch of prices also in the mid-morning just in case things went like, you know, a flash crash. So we set up a few things. Nothing hit. You know, we set it up about 20% down just to make sure, you know, in case we'll grab it. But there was some great trading opportunities. We actually did okay comparatively. Markets were down like 5%. We were down 3% in our trading portfolio. I was kind of happy about that because, you know, the positions held up. But also we actually cut down our exposure about a week ago. So that worked out really well. That was nice. But I had some shorts on. I had short on U.S. Steel. I had a short on the financials. All that played out very nicely. So that was good. But we closed down really hard that night. I mean, everything was red that night. This is into Monday night. Then the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down another fair value down another 1,200 points. Now on Monday we closed down 1,650 points, which is the all time biggest point day in market history. One of the top 25 days in terms of percentages. But that's a lot of points. It's a lot of movement out of nowhere. You know, all of a sudden the VIX goes crazy. The range for the Dow Jones futures on Monday, 1,786 points from top to bottom. Today, 1,802. And the problem with today was that after the close yesterday, the markets, right after the close at 4 o'clock, the markets went down again. The futures went down. So we were starting off with a 350 point deficit to begin with. To start the day, it's called a fair value calculation. About $4 trillion evaporated for the world equity markets over the past few days. European markets at a six-month low. The Nikkei is in a 10% correction. The Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P went negative on Monday for the year. So they were up 7% or so for the year. Then they went negative. And today they're just slightly positive again, after that big turnaround towards the end of the day. I mean, I don't know if you saw what happened today. We opened up really, really down pretty hard. And then all of a sudden things went like, hello. everybody said, oh, that's it. Let's just start buying. And buying went crazy. We there was a couple of technical indicators that, you know, we hit the 100-day moving average that held. So everybody was like, okay, we're holding that. We were below the 50-day moving average, and we're still below that on the S&P. The 200-day was a big concern that we were going to hit that. And, you know, this is a big problem. So the big question, I guess, is it over?
Well, what do you think?
No.
Well, when you say no, what do you mean by no? Do you mean you think it's going to
take
a big hit again?
I just can't imagine that the volatility is over, that we may see.
So you expect a little more fluctuation before it stabilizes.
Yeah. I mean, it would be pretty amazing if we just saw a 10% correction that happened over 3 days, 4 days, and then that's it. We're back to the, you know, back right on the horse again.
Back on the horse.
Yeah, you know,
here we
just
go.
Get it going. I just can't imagine that being the case. It's possible. I mean, I guess anything's possible, but I just can't see that.
It was pretty screwy, the whole thing, I thought.
Yeah.
And I never sensed that this was the crash we're looking for.
There was a few things that happened. Here's my 2 cents on this whole thing. First of all, which gets us right into the next discussion here. So what's happening in the markets that are so screwed up? First of all, everybody's investing in passive investments, ETFs. So when you buy an ETF, you're buying a basket of something, 500 stocks, 100 stocks, 30 stocks. When you sell it, you're selling them all as well. Everybody's just, you know, very passive. That's, I mean, buying these investments and it's putting their money in and okay. But what happens when now there's no more of the, or much fewer of the individuals buying, okay, I like that stock, I'm going to buy that and add it to my portfolio. I'm going to buy that stock, I'm going to add to my portfolio. It goes down, I'll buy it. No, they're just buying these giant baskets.
Right.
And they're selling the baskets. So the liquidity for individual securities is really all up to the ETFs. The second thing is that, and this is where active management actually does well. Our active managers did really well comparatively yesterday. On equity markets. But the second thing is that
are you referring to active managers of mutual funds?
Right, mutual funds. Yeah, we like mutual funds for certain areas and ETFs for others. And the active managers, which everybody's been poo-pooing for so long, actually
right, because ETFs seem like I think a lot of it has to do with just the commissions.
Right, it's a much
why should we pay these right, guys?
Right. Why should we pay somebody to watch over our hard-earned money when I could just do it for free? Yeah, that's a big issue, the expense ratios. And there is something to be said for investing in efficient markets and utilizing an index-based low-cost ETF. I have no problem with that. Bonds, no way. Emerging markets, things like that, probably not. So, you know, commodities, definitely not. So we have a less active individual investor that is broad-based investing through ETFs. When they start selling, it exacerbates the problem. You have less liquidity due to the fact that there has been a lot of shares taken out of the markets due to share buybacks. Right? So now you have less liquidity.
Right. Now we have two of your complaints.
Right. The next thing is that everybody got very complacent and said, oh, markets are going up forever. What would happen? You know, even the worst case scenario is what? 100 points on the Dow? They didn't see any downside at all. They've been raising their leverage amounts. There's a chart that we put on here over on DH Unplugged, episode number 394. Once this comes out, you can do it. The NYSE leverage chart. It's a month in arrears. But look at that chart.
Yeah, the margin debt is outrageously high.
Outrageously high. And look how well.
Well, it's outrageous. The highest, at least on this chart, since 1995. When it was at the value of, let's say, of the baseline of 100, it's now approaching 3,000.
Yeah,
billions.
No, the left-hand side is.
Oh, I'm sorry, 600. I'm sorry, 600 billion.
Right,
from 100, so it's up 6x.
Yeah, and since 1995, and this is the highest ever. But look how well it tracks the S&P as well. You know, when you get extraordinarily high peaks. Of, you know, any peak that you see rolls over because once the selling starts, the first thing that happens is You're going to liquidate anything you have a margin. So if I have a $100,000 account and I leveraged it up and I bought another $50,000 of investments on top of it. So I have 100,000 cash, borrowed 50 from the, you know, against my portfolio. Once the selling starts, you may get hit with a margin call. But even if you're not, one of the rules is, unless there's something wrong with you, is, all right, let's get off margin. Let's take down the positions, at least down to a 100% position, not a levered position. So you see this massive move since 2013. Why? Well, because markets have been running hot, because the Fed has an implicit backstop on things, and rates are really low. Even though margin rates are high.
Low rates really make a difference.
Yeah, because you could borrow all sorts of money and who cares? And this is just NYSE margin debt. This is not talking about those people that borrowed from their house, from their uncle, from their other plant somewhere else and borrowed it to invest in the markets. Mm. Okay, so very, I think the chart, you know, speaks for itself on that. Then we talked about passive investing. Then one of the things that you had that went on here is algorithmic trading. As a matter of fact, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin says that, he said this today, algorithmic trading definitely had an impact on market moves. Thank you so much, sir, for clarifying that. But you have all these algorithms that all of a sudden you start hitting numbers like 50-day moving average and stuff. And, you know, they try to bounce it. If it doesn't hit, they just sell it right down. So you have all these bots, if you will, these algorithms, these you know, they follow technicals. All of a sudden, you know, loading up. Then the VIX goes bananas. The VIX, which was, you know, it's averaging what, 10, 11, 12?
Yeah.
Starts going to 30, 35. Goes to 40, okay? And things are getting a little out of hand here. And then by the end of the day yesterday, markets are down 1650. The VIX is hitting like 45 or something like that at the close of the market, reminiscent of times when there's like a financial catastrophe. We only just took ourselves back to where we were at the beginning of the year, okay? But now we have this VIX at like, you know, financial Armageddon levels. And all of a sudden, after the market closes, something weird happens. They start selling off the market even more. And then the VIX goes to 50. The VIX is up over 100%. Now, there's all these strategies out there that they're the only thing they do, because it's been working for years, is when the VIX goes up, they short it. Right? The short volatility strategies. This has been going on for the last couple of years because they figure it's going to spike maybe to, I don't know, whatever number, and then come back down. And there are ETFs that actually will help you out with this. The problem is if you're short the VIX and the VIX goes up 100% and you're on the other side of that, how much did you go down?
But it's astronomical.
100%.
Yeah, you lost everything, don't you?
Lost everything. So, all of a sudden, at the close last night, one of these, I start watching them because I was trading it throughout the day, you know, in and out. I kept a little piece overnight. I figured, you know what, the VIX at 50, it's probably going to come back a little bit, right? All of a sudden, this thing goes from $71 at 4 o'clock to like $60, $50, $40. I'm like, what's going on with that? That doesn't look right, right? So I buy a little bit for client portfolios at 36. 36, it's down 50% in 15 minutes. So what's going on, right? This doesn't make any sense at all. I'm looking at it for myself, I'm asking something. Everybody's like, this is not right. Obviously, there's some miscalculation here or something. You know, yes, it was a bad day for the VIX, but okay. Small piece, I buy just a small, really a small, small piece, okay? All right, time goes on. 4:30, 5 o'clock, $15, $12. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Well, let me give you the punchline of all this. What happened is that an ETN, the XIV ETN, which has the right to actually accelerate the valuation and actually close in the rare event that the NAV closes down below 20% of what it was the day before. So, you know, an 80% loss of the NAV. The NAV of that fund, which was at the beginning of the day at $99, closed at $4. wiping out about $1.6 billion.
Yeah, I'm looking at the VIX.
XIV.
I'm sorry.
XIV.
XIV, right. Velocity Shares Inverse VIX. Yeah, so, this one was going for the moon, and then it was not only a fallen dagger, but it went from like 100 to 7
yep.
in one trade.
Yeah. it was unbelievable last night. I enlisted a lot of people to get to the information. I know some people at some of the funds. I called them up. They couldn't even talk to me about this. They were like closed lip. I said, what's going on with this thing? I didn't own that one. I owned a different one. But still, I was like, what's going on with this? There was a total implosion. This is, and I don't know if some wise guys out there said, hey, we're so close to 100% gain in the VIX. Let's just break this market down and bust this fund. Who knows? Possibly, right?
It's a very strange looking chart. Let's put it that way.
It's done. They're closing. It's done.
The XIV is dead?
Yep. On February 15th, they're going to do the valuation. You'll get a check in the mail if there's anything left.
Yeah, well.
So this is a lesson about these levered and these. We've always talked about the UVIXI and how it's always a bad investment, right? I've always said that. But you could, you know, maybe trade it inside the day a little bit here and there, move in and out of it. But holding it for a period of time is a problem. Again, the XIV.
Yeah, in this case, holding it for less than a month, you'd be doomed.
Yeah, it was a one-day wonder. It was a one-day wonder. Like I said, it's closed. It's done. Because the way it's an ETN, and this in their materials, it said that if they do this, they can close it, blah, blah, blah. So they closed it. The other ones are still open. But now all of these are broken. These are all screwed up. Every single one of them.
Now, was it possible to ever short this thing?
Of course.
Yeah.
But who would have known? Right. I mean, you know, this thing is this was a one of those Six Sigma slash Black Swan events.
Yeah. Well.
So there was stories going left and right of people that took $50,000 over the last 3 years, made it into $4 million and then kaput done. I'm telling you, the story's all over the place about this.
Well, it's hard to get out. If you look at this chart, it's just like it's a sheer winner.
It happened and every time it popped, it would, you know, every time the VIX would pop, it would come right back down. So you just keep on hitting. And then what you do is you keep on, you know, it's working so well. I'm just going to lever up. So here's the thing. That was part of all this, of this process that I think really screwed things up pretty well.
Well, it definitely did a number.
Yep. We also saw that several robo-advisors, their sites crashed yesterday when the markets were getting whacked. We saw that Wealthfront and Betterment crashed. Outages at Vanguard, Charles Schwab. But you know what?
What good is it having these guys, these robo-advisors or anything online if this happens?
I don't know. Ours didn't crash, the one we manage.
Yeah, well, you don't have millions and millions of people.
I understand that, but I'm just saying that maybe
that's... But if you had millions and millions of people, you should have the ability to... what is all this on-demand stuff that they're always selling us? You know, Amazon does. Everybody, if you got more demand, we'll just give you more bandwidth. We'll just give you more space. I don't see any evidence of that working.
Yeah, the elasticity of the...
Yeah, elasticity.
The elastic web. I don't know, but I'm just saying, I'll say it again. Investology did not go down. We had no problems at all. And maybe there's a reason why you don't want to be with one of these big boys. That's all I'm saying. Check out investology.com. All right. Alan Greenspan, January 31st said, there are two bubbles. We have a stock market bubble and we have a bond market bubble. The trouble in the bond market will eventually be a critical issue, he said. Adding that for the short term, it's not too bad. And this is right on the heels of Janet Yellen.
So yeah.
I don't know what that, you know, he's.
Well, you know, this guy is not much of a prognosticator anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that from past experience and just doing a reverse engineering of what he's ever said. But to say it on top of Yellen going on about, well, the market's overpriced, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Which is what she said on the NewsHour. That day, didn't help.
Right. Ray Dalio, you know him from Bridgewater, one of the largest or the largest hedge funds. He was over in on the 23rd. He kind of looks kind of silly now. And this is probably a reason why you shouldn't be paying so much attention to the talking heads out there that are, you know, for 30 seconds or 2 minutes on, CNBC or Fox Business. He was over in Davos, and he said on January 23rd, if you're holding this, I thought this was a pretty aggressive statement.
He's pretty bad, yeah.
If you're holding cash, you're going to feel pretty stupid. We're in the Goldilocks period right now. Inflation isn't a problem. Growth isn't a problem. Everything is pretty good.
Growth is good, he said, actually.
Yeah, growth is good, yeah. Everything is pretty good with a big jolt of stimulation coming from the tax changes in the tax laws. That was January 23rd.
Yeah. Well, he could have waited a couple of days to say that.
Yeah. He's a little early, a little late. But I thought that, you know, that particular statement, I thought he's a pretty smart guy, obviously. Very smart guy. No question about this. And he usually thinks pretty well about what he says, how he says it. He even wrote a book recently called Principles. And, you know, it's one of those books that has a lot of interesting commentary and thought-provoking wisdom in there. And then he puts this out. You know, you got to wonder.
Was it? You sure do.
Yeah. On top of on finishing up on our, as CNBC would call it, markets in turmoil. You know, as soon as the Dow crashed yesterday, you knew they were going to have a markets in turmoil show. And sure enough, 7 p.m. last night, markets in turmoil, special edition. That's what they did. Yeah.
They're pretty predictable.
Yeah. Bitcoins and altcoins have been trashed. Bitcoin was down below 7,500, down about 60% from its high, hit as low as 6,100 overnight.
Yeah.
Altcoins are getting killed. You got continuing comments from Asia and regulatory meetings in the U.S. There actually was somewhere here. I don't know where I put this. I thought I put this somewhere here. Comments about the coins. Did I have it? Here. The Senate Banking Committee on Virtual Currencies said that both the SEC and the CFTC admit they have no jurisdiction to regulate virtual currencies. They're able to regulate the futures contract, but not the spot markets. And they went on and on a variety of different things. He says, this guy, Jay Clayton, he stated that ICOs that are clearly securities offerings should be treated and regulated as such, which makes sense.
I think so.
Yep. But otherwise, they had nothing to talk about. Nothing impressive there. Let's see what else we have here.
I don't know how people can consider this a crash. I'm not talking about the market. I'm talking about the currencies.
Why? It's down 50%, 60%. It's not you mean like a one-day
crash? It's not, since it has no value whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's, you think one of these coins is worth $6,100?
No, I don't know. To somebody it is, obviously. I mean, they came back up today to 7,500, but to somebody it is. There's some interesting ideas with some of the coins, but it does seem a little bit pricey.
When it was $400, I thought it was high. Anyway, onward.
According to Mario Draghi, who is the ECB central bank, head of the ECB central bank, he said, this is another problem. This is kind of, I think, one of the final issues here about what's going on with markets. He said that the euro economy, this was today, is expanding in robustly, stronger growth rates than previously expected. He said the economic expansion is broad-based. Employment growth has recently strengthened, as well as in all main sectors, namely in industry, construction, and market services. In other words, what this all means is that maybe this extraordinary stimulus that they have could be removed or slowed, right? That's the takeaway from this, isn't it?
That's what it sounds like. I think it's just asking for trouble.
Right. So that's why we took away the punch bowl. This is another taper tantrum, but a stimulus tantrum. This is the market saying, give me back my heroin. You know, you're threatening to take it away. No, you can't do that. Or your crack or whatever it is.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely correct. This is probably one of the elements.
Yeah, so everybody's kind of really nervous that we may have a few. And then, by the way, this morning, like clockwork, somebody came out and said, you know, the inflation issue is, you know, we see it there, but it's not as big of a deal. Maybe we won't have as many rate hikes as the markets are thinking and blah, blah, blah. You know, that was part of the reason why markets turned around a bit today. You know, we got these words from the Fed. They know they you know, all right, who's going out? Who's going to be the one today? Markets aren't doing well. Who's going out? Who's speaking? you know?
Yeah, and they push one guy out to the mic.
Right. Exactly. All right, let me refresh something here. Okay. Now, if you remember, last week we talked about the S&P 500 and how it would have to come down potentially to what level to meet the 50-day moving average, which seems like a long way away. Remember that?
Yes.
So that chart with the Bollinger Bands that we talked about and how it was riding up the Bollinger Bands at the top above the two standard deviations above the 50-day moving average, right? So here's this refreshed for you. There's a chart there. It says S&P chart.
I'm looking at it now.
Yep. So
I see the old Bollinger Band, and then I see this collapse.
Yep.
Between the bands. It didn't go below the other one, but.
Right. So it didn't get oversold.
It's not my understanding that that's the way the Bollinger Bands are supposed to work.
Well, there's a couple of things. The first thing is oftentimes you'll see a channel develop and stocks may get overdone. They hit the top and they come back to and meet the 50-day and they may go below it a little bit. Usually two standard deviations below is it's, you know, somewhat of its, you know, overdone level. Two standard deviations above are the overbought levels. But
yeah, well, never did that.
Right, but the problem, well, it hasn't gotten there yet. We're not done yet, maybe. But if you look at this, the problem was, and I pointed this out last week, was that we were just way above two standard deviations above. That was my biggest concern.
Yes, it was.
So
you called the crash.
Oh, I don't know about that, but okay. Yeah, I knew it. I knew it. Now, the thing you've all been waiting for, which is the surprise, the parting gift that Janet Yellen provided to the markets on Friday after the close. Did you see this? What happened with Wells Fargo? Did you read about this?
Yeah, I did. Where they just said you can't make any more money.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah, there's no government interference or anything, but you just can't make any more money.
This is the
not that they couldn't have cracked down on their practices, because they really didn't.
But this was kind of like the reverse of a presidential pardon when a president is about to move on. You know, when he's no longer in office, usually you have those last few pardons. Right.
Yeah, they started giving pardons away to all kinds of criminals.
Right. This was the reverse. This is like saying how it shows how the Federal Reserve was probably fed up with all of the things that that happened at Wells Fargo, the fake accounts,
shenanigans.
Yeah, exactly. And
so, making the banking industry look like a bunch of crooks.
But clearly, while she was there, she didn't want to do anything to don't really understand anything about the Fed and how they operate. I think this in itself shows you that they are just there to support the banks the whole time. And even if they do something awful and terrible, like what they did during 2005 through 7, they're there just to back them. And they didn't say
seems so.
And they didn't do anything. A couple of slaps on the hand to Wells Fargo for the fake accounts, all the consumer abuses and all that. Well, in a party gift, she says, the Federal Reserve has ordered Wells Fargo to halt its growth, citing widespread consumer abuses. Yeah. They will restrict the growth in the firm until it sufficiently improves its governance and controls. The bank is barred from growing beyond its size at the end of 2017 until it is satisfied that the Fed has approved it. And the bank must submit a plan within 60 days how it's going to do this. So they can't grow past whatever they're at this point. That's pretty nasty.
I'd say this is probably as nasty as it gets, although you might indicate that they're not at this size. This whole thing is a scam, and they can grow into the size that they're currently at, if you wanted to be cynical about it.
I am sure that there are ways already that they're, you know, departments have gone out and figured out, we could do it this way and it's still within the rules. And what happens if we grow?
We won't really look like we're growing, and then we can build it up. And then all of a sudden, after we get approval for our plan, then boom, the next thing you know, we're huge again.
Right. And what's the worst thing that's
going to
happen?
Faster than usual. I think this is an investment opportunity.
And what's the worst thing that will happen? They'll slap a penalty on them. And who cares? They made the money anyway.
Yeah. So what they have to do now is keep doing what they're doing, which is the best time to do that is when you're being watched. Keep doing what you're doing. Hide the money. Hide the money. It's hideable. I mean, come on. These are professionals. Hide the money. And then when they get the go ahead, all of a sudden, big amounts, huge amounts of money show up on the books and the stock goes crazy. I think I'm telling you, this is like a good long.
It could be. It maybe this is just
sink the stock. What happened to the stock after this announcement was made?
It was down 5 or 6%.
Yeah, it's probably a buying opportunity. It goes down a little more.
Yeah, that was on Friday. A couple more things before we get to some of the goodies. Broadcom has made a final and best offer to buy Qualcomm.
Yeah.
They ratcheted up to $121 billion, which is $60 in cash and $22 in Broadcom stock, which is interesting that Qualcomm is only trading at like 63 or 64. So you'd basically get the cash and free Qualcomm stock.
Yeah, you get $82 worth of value.
Right, but it's trading well below.
Yeah, you'd think that it would be higher than this.
Mm-hmm. Keep that in mind. Put that in the back of the old noggin.
Well, put it on the list.
It's on there already, so we could share it if you want. No. We can go purple. You sent me an article about Apple, about the iPhone is mature and what's next, and what are your thoughts on this?
Well, that's why I sent it to you, because I didn't really pick up anything that I haven't been thinking for a while. So I think the big question is, what are they going to do with their $200 billion, supposedly, that they're going to bring back of repatriated money? Have they done it yet? Were they going to do it?
They're bringing it back, and there was comments they made that they are going to use it. They're going to their plans are to bring down their cash outside of the U.S. down to zero. And a lot of that, I assume, is going to be used for share buybacks and dividends and possibly some CapEx and bonuses and things of that nature. That's a lot of money. But they could buy back chunks of their company.
They could buy back a lot of their company. And then what is this market cap? Well, let's wait. What is the market cap of Apple? It's the highest.
$800 billion?
Yeah, they could buy some of it. Or they could go on a buying spree and start buying little companies, because if the iPhone is mature and pretty much dead money, it makes money, but it's not going to set the world on fire anymore. And Samsung is going nuts with, they have a better phone. Some people might argue that, but if you've ever had the two phones side by side and you listen to the sound on the Samsung phone, I've said this before, it's so crisp. They can start buying up companies and make themselves a little more diversified. I think that would be a good idea, because I don't see this coming with four or five loan products going forever as the world's biggest company unless they have something to fall back on. Don't you think?
Yeah, and their last earnings showed a slowdown in sales pretty much across the board. I mean, there was a couple of bright spots, but there was definitely a slowdown. And growth is slowing. There's no question about that. The services is growing dramatically. That's something that a lot of people are talking about, that everything that they're building these days has to have a back-end service attached to it of some sort. So it's not going to be – it may be standard.
Yeah, but are they the best at this? They don't have much of a reputation for their services. I mean, what if they bought SAP and Salesforce and IBM? They got enough money to buy a lot of companies.
Well, that is interesting. That's more of a business service. I'm talking about, for example, they put out iTunes and they have an entire music catalog that you can buy. So that's a service. That's a B2C.
Yeah, it's a horrible product.
Okay, I got that. But it's those kind of things. Or it's like the apps that you buy and possibly the in-app purchases, or it's maybe the iCloud upgrades that you have there, or it's maybe, the Apple TV, where they get a piece of the action from the various companies when you sign up for something.
Yeah. Well, they're pretty good at leveraging that stuff. There's no doubt about that. But then again, it's still dependent on somebody else. I mean, it's a little different than the iPhone. Apple TV, they're dependent on too many variables and other companies. With the Apple iPhone, they're just dependent on Foxconn, and they got other people that can do that job.
Yeah. There has been some discussion about them buying Netflix, which I would find a little bit pricey. especially because
Netflix is too expensive.
Apple does things on the cheap. I mean, I don't know who else they would. I don't know. It would seem like whoever they're going to buy anyway, if it is in the media area, would possibly, you know, be a conflict of interest in terms of Department of, you know, DOJ laws, you know, in terms of
monopolies. You think?
Yeah. I mean, they're basically a problem in itself to begin with, you know, with the amount of...
How about buying Disney? Would that be a problem?
Some people in the chat room talked about that just now, as a matter of fact. Would that be a problem? Maybe. That would be fun.
It could be done.
Yeah. I mean, and they got a lot there. And they have the new...
You also have Lorraine Jobs, Steve's widow, who owns most of Disney, or she has the largest share of Disney, and also, I think, obviously a big chunk of Apple. She'd be a good go-between. She'd vote yes.
Okay. Yeah, right. Yep. Oh, that's good for us. Maybe. I just, it is. What do you need to grow anymore for you? You got an $800 billion company. Is it really necessary to get any bigger?
That's the other argument I was just going to go into, which is why don't they start spinning stuff off? The Macintosh division, for example, and make Macintosh Inc. and taking that and having a big piece of that and leveraging that in the market.
Yeah.
It's a good time to do an IPO for the Macintosh. People love that machine.
Yeah.
Yep. And they don't, Apple doesn't seem to be, you know, promoting it much anymore. Keep the pad or even push the pad off too. You know, with the Macintosh, I think I keep the pad. I take an iOS stuff and keep it and then sell off the Mac OS and the Macintosh and anything related.
It's going to be interesting to watch. I mean, they definitely need to get something going here. I don't know if this HomePod is going to be the thing. Although I've tried. Have you tried the new AirPod? What are they called? AirPods? No. EarPods?
So
no.
Those remote earplugs that aren't hooked together. So if you lose one, you might as well throw the other one out. That one.
Yeah, that one. They're pretty cool. They actually sound pretty good.
I have not tried them. I'm not a big fan of buds of any sort.
I hear you. Moving along.
They're hard on the ears. They're very difficult for you.
They are hard on the ears. They're definitely not AirPods. That's what it is. I tried them. I thought they were pretty cool. Way better than I expected. Let's say that. Way better. Because the old Apple devices, you know, the headphones that came along with the iPhones, I was like, that is uncomfortable. They sound like crap, you know, and they always break. These things are pretty good. Anyway, moving along. Snap is out with their earnings, you know, Snapchat. So what's interesting here is that they actually had a bump in their daily users up from 178 to 184 million. Average daily users. The EPS, they still lost money, about 13 cents a share. Expectations were for a loss of about 16 cents. Revenue, they beat. They made $286 million versus $252. And stock is up 25% after hours with the commentary that there's a big short interest, about 94 million shares, 6 days to cover. So this is probably some major short covering going on there.
Huh.
And Disney's out with earnings too. They beat on, they actually beat on, this is the old, when you see this kind of thing, well, Disney came out, they beat on earnings, $1.89 versus $1.61. Revenues they missed on. That screams buybacks to me. Just telling you, that's what I see every time. That means they adjusted their price because they bought back a bunch of the shares and they were able to push their EPS up, even though they missed on revenues.
Good catch.
Yep. All right, a couple of quick and shameless plugs. No Agenda Show. You can listen to John C. Dvorak and Adam Curry each and every week on Thursdays and Sundays at 12 o'clock. And I suggest you get there a little early because you can hear this. I'm not sure what it's called, but it's the opening salvo music. And it's riveting. It's hypnotic. Would you say it's hypnotic?
I don't listen to it.
I think it's hypnotic. And of course, if you're tired of just the old stuff you're doing in the markets these days, maybe it's an opportunity to go over to Horowitz & Company and check out some of the strategies. Just go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, the Aero strategy, TDI Managed Growth strategy, Investology, and global allocations are over there. And especially if it's you're thinking maybe it's time. Okay, we got some Fed limericks in. Actually,
Chris, this part of the show.
Chris Wilson, who has a, I think he's British.
Chris Wilson is a very creative guy. He's one of our one of our producers at No Agenda.
He has got to, if he is, I don't know what he does for a living, but if he is not a voiceover guy, I don't know who is. He's got this deep British accent. Mm. It was like, wow.
He's Australian, I believe.
Maybe, that's true. Anyway, he sent us in an audio, which I had him put in text so we could read it, but he sent me an audio limerick. He actually recorded it and sent it. But all right, we have two. And the first one's from me. As we say goodbye to the yellin, markets found good reason to start the sellin. Now walks in the J, all hopes are in play, that low rates are what he keeps on telling.
Well, it was pretty good. I liked it. It had nice pace and flow, good rhyming. I'll give you a B plus.
B plus? Okay. From you, that's like an A. So
I'll give you an A minus.
Oh, B plus is good. Let me just write this down. I got to write this down because we actually.
Yeah, you got to keep there.
We got to keep score on it. On a B, there's a B plus. There's a B plus. Okay. Chris Wilson sent one in. Of course, you could send in limericks as well if you feel compelled to do so. Just go over to send us an email if you know what I get us there. Go over to the best way also is the Disciplined Investor. We got a little form that says Ask Andrew. Just click down and send it. Chris Wilson writes in. He says, my late night limerick do fed. I've recorded so it faithfully read and tendered my submission for John's terse derision and a D. Now I'm heading to bed.
That's not bad. I'll give him a B on that one.
Oh. I think that's he'll be very happy with that. All right. There we go. Of course, if you love the limericks, you love the show, you can send over a donation because, you know, we'll use it in good health and spirits.
We need to buy t-shirts.
That's true. We are getting a little bit low on the t-shirts. Which so just go over to the website DH Unplugged. You can't miss the donate button. It's everywhere. So if you haven't donated before, please do so. Just you get a little bit of enjoyment, a little bit of interest, and you're like, oh, there he goes again talking about the donations. Well, probably because you haven't donated before. So we need a lot more participation in that, or else you're going to start getting the John C. Dvorak newsletters that talk about how the show needs more. We're not doing that yet. We're not up to that.
Which reminds me.
Okay. Yeah. All right. The closer to the pin for NVIDIA, we have a lot of activity. It's going to end on the 9th. You could go check that out. Also, our DH Unplugged. Who's in the lead. It kind of changes all the time. And then after this is done, we'll pick up another one. But I think NVIDIA did come down pretty strong. So I'm in the running here. I'm only about a point and a half away. So that's good.
Yeah. We'll see. How many days we got left?
About four, three.
Ah, they'll get back. They'll be back on track.
Yeah, it was up pretty big today. Now, here's a surprise and a shocker. Starbucks has too many stores and its prices are too high, many analysts are starting to agree about.
Gee.
I mean, is this breaking news. Now, this is interesting. I didn't know this. Did you know that they have more U.S. locations than McDonald's?
Well, since I know there's a place, I've seen a couple of areas where there's one on the two corners, kitty corner, two within the same couple of blocks. It wouldn't surprise me. McDonald's, I think, is a little more selective about where they put their stores. No, it doesn't surprise me.
I've been to New York City where there's a store on one side of the street and one on the other side of the street. And I was always like, what are they thinking?
Yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah. So they're concerned, these analysts, that they need to lure in more traffic and deliver growth because things are starting to slow down a little bit. Aside from the fact that it's horrible coffee, in my opinion, that's.
I've never thought it was good. I've always thought it was a little bland, a little tasteless. It didn't have a lot of coffee flavor.
I find it very acidic and very edgy and burnt.
I haven't noticed the burnt part. I mean, that pizza is notorious for having burnt coffee because they were just burnt and stale. So it gets a kind of a funny flavor people like. Yeah, I know. I'd rather buy coffee from someone else.
Yep.
I will drink it.
I won't. I've put my foot down. I'm not doing it.
Oh, good.
All right. Now, you remember a couple of weeks back during, I think it was in Davos, where Treasury Secretary Mnuchin said that, hey, you know, a weak dollar, we like it. The next day, the Wilbur Ross, the Commerce Secretary, came out and said, oh, no, that's not what he meant. And then the day after that, Donald Trump came out, oh, no, you misunderstood him. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's out today. And not only is he out today with a comment, but he's out today with a comment that is
the— Who's out?
Secretary Mnuchin.
Oh, Mnuchin?
Mnuchin. No, he's not out. No,
they kicked him out?
No, he's not out. He's out with a comment.
Oh, he came out with another comment.
Comment, yes. And he said, this is like line by line. This is in the Treasury Secretary handbook when you sign on for a job, okay? He said, in the long term, a strong dollar is in the U.S.'s best interest. They all say the exact same thing. That's why everybody was so unnerved when he said what he said last time.
God.
All right, a couple other things here. Donald Trump accused Democrats of being un-American and treasonous for their lack of applause during the State of the Union address.
Yeah, because that's never happened before.
Yeah, treasonous. And the White House said, oh, he was joking. He was just joking. Yeah,
Can't you take a joke? Jeez, what's wrong with you people?
Yeah. Government shutdown possibly on Thursday. We'll see what happens there. Donald Trump says, well, maybe we need a shutdown. I'm going to do a shutdown if we don't get what we want. So there you go. New Orleans city officials said on Thursday that more than 46 tons or 93,000 pounds of carnival beads were among the trash pulled from clogged catch basins along a 5-block stretch of a downtown parade route. That's pretty impressive.
You know, I was in New Orleans once after the Mardi Gras, and somebody took a drive down one of the streets where the thing goes. I didn't like a residential neighborhood that had a lot of trees.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole it's like a mile of trees that were just had tons of these beads hanging from them. You don't realize it because, you know, you see most of it in the old town, and there's people from the balconies throwing the beads around. Girls, you know, showing off their breasts. But
that's not sexual harassment anymore? We're allowed to still do this? Because if we are, I'm going.
Well, we'll see. But you have no idea what a mess it makes in the neighborhoods. It's just the trees. I don't know how you get this stuff out of there. It's really a mess.
Yeah.
But it's what they do.
And the last story, and I hope you bring this up. I'm bringing this up because I want you to bring this up, if you haven't done so already, on the No Agenda Show. And it's about Poland. Have you brought up this whole new decree that they're going to be signing into law that will impose jail terms for suggesting the country was even in the slightest amount complicit in the Holocaust?
No, I know about it. I've looked at it.
This is bad stuff. This is just, I know that they're sensitive to it. You can't, you know, they don't want you to say it's a Polish death camp, but I mean, come on.
Well, what they're bitching about is, and they're bitching at the United States mostly. For Comey is one of the guys who did this, and there's a couple others that said that the Polish people were complicit in running the camps specifically. And that's what this law is about, because they believe that the only reason that Poland, even though it's in the EU and it has all this relationship with the United States, including George Bush, who used to compliment them for helping out in the Iraq war, can't get to the point where you can't get in the United States without a visa. You have to have a visa to go from Poland to the United States, even though no other country in the EU has to do that. And they believe this is Israel that is creating this fuss. And because Israel also believes that the Polish were somehow complicit in running the camps. So since they are getting nowhere with this, they made a law.
I mean, it's just one of those no touch areas. You know what I'm saying? I don't know for facts, but you know, I'm sure there was Polish people who were Nazi sympathizers and who maybe even were to the point that they said, you know what? I got a couple of choices here. I'm either going to be killed or I'm going to work at this place. That's possible.
Well, there's no evidence that Polish say of this, what you just said. And what you just said is the problem.
All right. Well, we just got to keep our eye on this because there's something weird about the whole thing.
I think it's going to go nowhere personally. That's but good. All right, go on.
Now, more importantly, what is John C. Dvorak writing for PC Magazine?
Bitcoin.
Oh, wow.
Is that fast enough?
Wow, you killed it. You were you were at 3 seconds as the under over today.
And they're lost. I did. I wrote about Bitcoin a couple of weeks ago with some other stuff. I kind of combined it, but now this was just an entire column kvetching about Bitcoin and why I think it's a joke.
The whole Bitcoin culture is the really fascinating thing.
Yeah, I bitched about that too. So I'm in. It'll be running tomorrow, I think, or maybe Thursday.
All right, get that over.
And everyone will hate me as usual.
Of course.
So what?
Well, yeah, of course. You always. I don't think you are at all concerned about that.
No. You don't have to read it.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, don't read it. It's that good.
Yeah. Yeah, don't read the column on Bitcoin.
Yep. Yep. All right, let's take a look at the stocks. The game we play is not an offer to buy or sell any security. It's nothing more than some fun that we're having here. If it's for some reason you decide, hey, you know what? I'm going to follow that idea. Well, do yourself a favor. Make sure to...
Well, you've been out of your luck last show. If you follow the line, I mean, we're out. Everybody, like, we have three stocks. No, we have two stocks, three. One, two, three stocks left, and they're all shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, and everything else get bumped.
I had somebody that wrote me that they bought the UVXY, UVXY, that ProShares Ultra VIX, which again, we know is a busted. We get stopped out up 21%. That thing, if you held it through today or yesterday, it's up like 180%.
Wow.
That's how crazy that thing went.
That would have been a good call.
Yeah, but I'll take the 21%. Anyway, if in fact you do decide to follow any of this, please go and get professional advice, and whether it's psychological or financial, I really don't care. But get some advice and make sure that you know what you're doing before you get involved in this, because it could be some risk and you could lose a ton of money. So basically, yeah, everything is off the list besides Straight Path, which is a short up 22%. You got taken out of Penske for 4.5%, which is good considering what's gone on in the markets recently. Bygene, you had a
profit. Yeah, these are all greens. There was only one loss, which was the NVIDIA.
Yeah.
Everything else is green. Alliance, so. Yeah.
That was good.
Well, there's also the Alliance MMA.
Yeah.
But that's a penny stock. I don't even know if I should have been taken out of it. What did it go to?
It was a 15% stop.
Hmm.
I could have pushed it harder, but...
I think we'll put it back on.
Okay. I have three stocks. I may whittle that down to two. I liked Cara this morning when I was doing this, but it ended up going up 5%. So I'll keep it on there right now. We had it on before. We made like 20% on it. Buying it around these levels... This is kind of the support level, about 12 and a quarter or 12 and a half. So it ran up. I have Qualcomm. Do you want to share that with me?
Yeah, yeah. I'll be on. I'd like to get on that.
So we got JCD/AH. Okay. And I'm going to short Credit Suisse. Now you may say, what? Where's that coming from, right?
Where's that coming from?
Yeah. They were the ones that were holding and the ones that were the bankers backing the XIV ETN.
Oh,
They had the largest position in this. Now,
oh, really?
Yeah. Now, they also came out today and said, oh, no, we're not taking it. You know, we don't have any losses on this, which I'm thinking, how is that?
How does that work?
How does that exactly? I mean, I get that, you know, that they may have hedged some of that out and stuff, but I don't know about this. So that's why it was down 2% today. It was down like 8%. When last night, when things were getting crazy. But I have a feeling that there could be some reverberations in terms of regulatory lawsuits, you know, because that's how it goes. And they're not the cleanest group in town anyway. So I'm going to short CS, Credit Suisse. What do you got,
well,
sir?
I'm going to get back on the... on the bandwagon for Bygene.
Oh, back to Bygene.
Yeah, BGNE.
And you got it.
Because it kind of took a hit on the downturn. I think the Baker brothers are still there, and they're long. And so I'm going to go on that on Bygene, just as a whatever you want to call it.
Whim, or a hunch.
A hunch.
What else you got? Anything else?
I don't really have anything else I was looking for, except for the Qualcomm thing. No, I'm good.
Okay. All right. Well, I will see you again next week.
All right. See you then. Right,
you've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.